Hey there, folks, and welcome to a very special episode of Radio Free Nintendo. I'm your host, Carl Castaneda, and I'm joined by Evan Birchfield.
Hello, everyone.
And just Evan Birchfield.
just Evan's me this time.
Just Evan, and it's been a while since it's been just you and me, Evan.
Yeah, actually, it has, and I think that I think it was the first and last time was several months ago, probably about close
almost
to a year now.
Yeah. It was back when we still had Nintendo Pirate Radio.
Back when there was there was chaos with between warring factions between the two podcasts. Yeah. But those are the good old days. I miss two person podcasts actually. I think that they're something that we should go back to. But obviously, I'm not in charge anymore, so it's not up to me.
And I'm too lazy to change things. Oh well.
Yeah.
But so, yeah. We're here to talk about a very specific subject. You know, we're still going to have our regular episode this week. We're still going to have it's actually a pretty giant episode. It's close to an hour and a half. But we're also offering this little bite-sized podcast because all we're really talking about is Super Mario Galaxy. Now, the day we're recording this is the day we're putting it up, and today, Monday, November 12th, Super Mario Galaxy was released. Kinda.
Yes. Kinda. True. It's so true. Have you been trying to find it in any stores today, Carl?
No, see, because the thing is that Fire Emblem came in for review, and so I've been playing that.
Okay.
And so, and I'm going to trade in some games and then get Galaxy for free, like in a week.
Uh-huh.
But I'm not the kind of guy who needs to have it right away, so I'm just letting everybody, you know, get in their whole launch craziness.
Sure.
And then I'll either just borrow it from Mike or get a copy for free.
Mm-hmm. I'm envious of you because the pain that I went through today was pretty terrible.
I know.
Most people, like, you'll go into NeoGAF, you'll go on to even our own forums, and you'll find people are struggling with trying to just find a copy of the game. Nintendo has changed their verbiage from shipping date to release date. They are actually saying release date now. With this big of a game, the impression was that they're shipping these copies early. I've heard a lot of different stories about when they're shipping to who. Some people are having, like, Nintendo may have shipped the games to, say, GameStop's warehouse on Friday, but GameStop is not going to actually get that shipment from their warehouse until tomorrow. So it's really unfortunate because the game is released today. Everybody wants it today. Nintendo announced today, and I would say 75% of the stores that you go to, if not 80, 90%, are going to turn you away. I had to go to a Fred Meyer. If you live in the Northwest, Fred Meyer's the place to go because there's no such thing as a pre-order at a Fred Meyer. Fred Meyer is a gigantic grocery store, clothes outlet, as well as having a gigantic electronics department. Other places to check are Sears, if you still have a video game section in your Sears, or other big stores along that line. Walmart, sometimes, but tends to be a pretty big failure. But a lot of people on NeoGAF have gotten their copies at Walmart.
Right.
So,
but yeah, I mean, you gave me a call actually right in the middle of recording while we're recording the new Radio Free Nintendo. You're like, I got it. Like, you finally tracked out a copy.
Yeah.
And then everyone on the show is like, where'd you get it? And like, we all basically dropped what we were doing so that we could find out where you had tracked out a copy.
That's really funny. And that's the way I felt. Like, I went on to NeoGAF and I posted there to let everyone know. I told the staff to so that they all knew where I got it because it's important, that I think, for gamers, because of the internet, can band together. And we are actually changing the way retail works through the internet. And hopefully, I mean, really retail as a business has suffered a lot of... Well, a lot of criticism, thanks to Penny Arcade. Mm-hmm. Penny Arcade's recent bent on pre-ordering games. There are issues with Call of Duty 4. I think that's something we very much have to pay attention to, is how manipulative game stores are. And yet there are stores that don't sell games that maybe don't cater to us, but may actually be a little bit more reliable because they go by standard practice. If you sell something more than just games, then you've got more income, and you don't have to have these sticky rules that places like GameStop, EB Games have. So... I think that the retail world will have to succumb to the way the internet has, and places like, especially a big community like NeoGAF, where there are thousands of people online at any time, watching, keeping track, and the Houston people will gather together, the New York people will gather together, and the Pacific Northwest people will all pay attention. They say, "Oh, Fred Meyer." I had someone respond and say, "Yes, go to Fred Meyer." So.
Right.
That's the way it is.
Yeah, I mean, the whole thing about stores not having it, though, just kind of reeks of strange to me because, first of all, we know that every GameStop got Galaxy already. And that they've already had it because, A, those demos, that demo, all right, keep in mind, they didn't come alone.
Yeah.
That demo game that they put in, which is the real final boxed game, did not come in a singular package. It came in a box with other copies.
So we're hearing, and if that's true, then really there's no excuse for waiting. Right. Every GameStop I talked to said, it's coming out tomorrow,
and
Tuesday.
And B, Best Buy broke the street date.
Yeah, they did.
So there's that, and then it just seems very strange. It seems like there might be something corporate behind it.
Well, everybody's trying to cover their bases. The video game industry is not as monitored as the DVD industry. The DVD industry, if you break a street date, you hear from the studio, and they will be on your case.
Yeah.
It's a huge deal. Now, that's kind of changing because of I'm a big DVD purchaser, so I experienced this with online retailers, where the online retailers, in order to guarantee that we get our DVDs by Tuesday, because every DVD is released on Tuesday. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about that. Video games don't have this rule. Because of that, they sometimes ship a little early, so sometimes I get a very precious Criterion Collection DVD on Saturday before it's released, and if Criterion knew about that, and maybe sometimes they do find out, they're pretty upset, because that's not the way they want to run their business. Mm-hmm. At the same time, I don't see that happening so much with video games, where if you order a video game online, you're guaranteed to get it after everybody who buys it at retail. Because everybody who buys it at retail is already getting it later than the supposed release date.
Sure.
Because we don't have a system. We don't have rules. We don't say, this is the day. We say, around the 12th, around the 13th.
Yeah, that's really interesting, because you say that they have that with DVDs, and they have it with comics as well, where Wednesday is the day when all comics ship.
Mm-hmm.
So if you want, you know, a new comic day, you go in the store on Wednesday, and there they are. Video games like Thursday or Friday, this is when all new video games for that week are going to be there, then you know that's the day you can go, that's the day you can get it, and that's the day you're covered.
Yeah. I think it's something that the industry needs to take care of as a whole, especially because Nintendo could police this for the entire Wii selection rather than saying Midway's in charge of Midway's games and Capcom's in charge of Capcom's games. Just let Nintendo be the watchdog. Let Microsoft watch over the 360. Let Sony watch over the PlayStation. I think that this would... it's a matter of saying, what date do we guarantee this game is going to be in stores? Mm-hmm. They can't guarantee. Nintendo cannot guarantee the 12th because... I'm serious. 80% of people out there are not getting it. More people are going to get it this evening, but they've been trying since this morning.
Sure.
And most people are going to get it on the 13th. If they had guaranteed the 13th and told every retailer not to sell on Monday, then we would have something more in line with a DVD release. No misinterpreted communication. No destroyed expectations, I think.
Right. Well, there you go. I mean, and moving away from the actual release of the game, though, we've definitely been seeing, as far as reviews go, that it's been overwhelmingly positive.
I haven't seen anything
below a 9. It's usually ranged between 9 to 9.5. Mm-hmm. And I think that's actually been bothering some people, though, that it is getting the coveted 10, which is strange to me.
I agree.
Because the thing is, like, really, what's the difference, if you were to think about it logically, between 9.5 and 10? Half a point.
Uh-huh.
Which is barely a difference. But people have this idea in their head, and I'm guilty of it sometimes as well, of thinking that the coveted 10 is like, there's almost like a buffer between 9, 5, and 10, where you really need to go the extra mile to be the 10.
Yeah.
Whereas really, if you're thinking about it, between, you know, say 7 and 7.5, or 7.5 to 8, in our minds, there really isn't that much of a difference.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
it's
I agree.
It's very strange.
Well, I think what's happening with Super Mario is that most people who are playing it are acknowledging how great it is in the review.
Mm-hmm.
And then the best reviewers are the people out there like Jeremy Parrish and the even to a certain extent the guys at IGN, the people at GameSpot even, at least in the Nintendo fanboy community, consider very biased. They're having glowing reviews.
Sure.
Glowing reviews. Mm-hmm. And then they're giving a score... Especially someone like Jeremy Parrish, who has acknowledged that he hates review scores, will give that score based on their gut. Because they don't want to have to give some sort of numerical equivalent. They don't want to say, okay, so, I mean, Jeremy Parrish gave Halo a 9, and he got flack for that.
Yeah.
And then he gives Super Mario Galaxy a 9.5, yet everybody's looking at him and saying, well, 1UP, as an entity, gave Halo a 10 and Super Mario Galaxy a 9.5. I think that's unfair to Jeremy, Mr. Parrish. Not that I know him personally. I think that's unfair to him. I think it's unfair to 1UP. Yeah. And I think it's also unfair to the very concept of games journalism, because what people are doing is they're looking at that score and then they're saying, well, why didn't it deserve a 10? The situation now is they say, if it's a 9.5, what is it missing? And that doesn't make sense either, because that says the problem with the numerical system is that it says 10 is everything a game should be. Yeah. And then we're going to start docking every time
How it is, though.
Yeah. Every time the game makes a mistake, we're going to dock 0.5 and then that's another 0.5. And that shouldn't be it. If someone writes a review with no complaints and gives a game a 9, I think we should all be satisfied. Even an 8.5. These are high scores. It's a gut-based thing. Honestly, if we got rid of review scores altogether, we don't have to worry about it. That's my opinion.
Well, allow me to go on my brief spiel on review scores. It only takes a second, so I won't bore you too long. But as far as if you ask me, the experience of playing a video game is not a science, and therefore is not a number. The experience is an art, and art is expressed in words. So I think that really what we should be doing is, instead of using, you know, the 0 to 10 scale, just throw a word or a few words in at the end so that people can still go, so that people who don't like to read a giant review can still, like, you know, scroll down and read, you know, the bottom line, still kind of digest what the overall feeling of the review is, without a bunch of posters on NeoGAF saying, so basically game A is better than game B.
Yes, which is a bannable offense at NeoGAF if you say that. It actually is, because it happens so much.
Yeah, yeah.
So basically, that's the reason that numbers exist, is that we want this comparative scale. And that's not the way games ought to be viewed. Comparing games isn't wrong, but comparing them in terms of how much does this game achieve, as though 10 is perfection. And I don't think any honest reviewer would admit that a 10 is perfection, because anybody who admits that there is such a thing as a perfect game already has expectations, and they're feeding that into their review to say that this game fulfills everything that I want from a game, and that's not fair to anybody who's reading.
It's actually in our reviews policy that we're not allowed to use the word perfect.
Yeah, it is.
And, you know, and personally for me, I'm not a big fan of scores, but, you know, Big Papa Wendy says them's the rules, so we gotta use numbers. Yeah. But, you know, that's just me personally.
Johnny's point that he made when he commented on my editorial about review scores was that the problem for Nintendo World Report is that we are not going to be able to change boats midstream. We really cannot go and try and revolutionize this now. We could have maybe, if there weren't already a million things that we had to do last year when we changed from PGC to NWR, and we were getting ready for Wii, and I was working my butt off trying to get all kinds of review copies for everybody, then, you know, if everybody had less to do, and this was a new era for Nintendo World Report, we could have changed some of our policies more. But as it was, Wendy worked really hard at changing tons of other policies. He was taking care of a lot of things there, and that one's just too huge. Jeremy Parrish made a comment on his blog that most of the people in the industry hate review scores too. And whenever they've tried to remove them, then the audience stops buying their magazines, paying attention.
And this is true, but I think it's because they haven't offered a substitution. They're just chopping off the number. Now, I think if you offer the substitution, which in my case is just add a 5-word or less bottom line, I think we will be just as happy.
I think that, that's true. The problem is that bottom line could then be, there's actually two problems with it. One is, not that I think it's a bad idea, because I say it's better, but one of the problems is that when we have a bottom line, people start to use words like excellent, great, and those just become another form of numerical rating.
No, no, no. But you shouldn't be allowed to use the same words for different reviews.
Yeah, you're right. It should be some sort of descriptive phrase about the game that sums up the experience. Like, I felt like I was in Hyrule. That would be, a suitable bottom line for a Zelda game. And that's a huge compliment, because Zelda is usually about Hyrule or whatever world they're in. Termina or the ocean. It is about that. The other problem, though, that I have with the bottom line is, even if we got that part straight, is that there's the philosophical, literary issue of the signified versus the signifier, which is that words point towards something, but words themselves are not something. So when we say that I felt like I was in Hyrule, that each of those words can be redefined by any other person due to the subjectivity of human experience.
Right.
That's a problem.
However, but the thing about that is that, Evan, you cannot put objectivity on... You can't put a layer of objectivity on something that isn't inherently subjective.
What I think is that, although it is inherently subjective in that when I write, I'm writing about my experiences, I don't think that we should necessarily pretend that what I'm saying does not apply to many people, and that most people, if I am an objective reviewer, when I look at it, if I say, is this my bias? Like, say, is my bias prevent me from liking a game with simpler graphics versus more complex ones, or liking first-person shooters rather than third-person adventures? Mm-hmm. If I have removed enough bias to go in there, like, I haven't removed enough of my bias to review a fighting game ever. I just don't know if that's going to happen. I may work on it, but...
I'm all for transparency in that, you know, like, when I reviewed the first Fire Emblem, I said, I usually hate strategy games.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, especially, you know, I said I tried StarCraft for a while, had a bad experience with it, didn't really go for anything. But then, because I loved Fire Emblem so much, it gives you perspective on why I think the game is so great. So yeah. I'm all for, like, this transparency where, even if you were to review a fighting game, you would say, I hate fighting games. This is my experience. Take that in context.
Yeah.
Basically, showing context is really what I think is important.
Yeah, and what that does, too, is it opens up the possibility for us to not be making the definitive statement on a game, because no one person is purely objective and unbiased.
And that's what I think. Is I think that there should be no such thing as a definitive review. I'm speaking directly to the NWR reader right now. Don't just read Nintendo World Report. Read other people. Get a more comprehensive feel for what's going on.
And that doesn't mean going to Metacritic and just rounding off all the scores.
No, it means
reading every review to find out if and that doesn't, and it also doesn't mean dismissing every review. Everyone that contradicts, because what the truth is that in art, and I find this in so many different works of art, is that even though we all see things that are different, maybe in the long run, there's always common ground. Always. Because most of us within the Western world have a certain base set of logical assumptions, and we're going to go towards them. And if we have a philosophical base on which to review games, the disagreements will become much more interesting, and the agreements will become much more concrete. We will say that within the Zelda game, what is the game doing? What is it? What are its goals, and what does it achieve? And where does it maybe fail? And it's when we get into these kind of outer areas that we start to have disagreements. I think that that's a more powerful way of discussing art, because it's not a way of dismissing objectivity, because there is, in my opinion, ultimately a good or a bad game. And so a game is going to be either good or bad. But my job is not to say every single one of you out there will think that this is a good or a bad game. My job is to say, I experienced this, and I think very strongly that almost everyone out there will experience this too. If someone comes up to me and says Chibi Robo DS was not a 9, I'm honestly not going to be able to argue with them much. At the same time, that tells me about that person, to the point that I might even say to that person that I think that you're missing something, and I think you ought to think that it is a 9. And we have a point now of discussing without saying that my review was definitive because I'm all-knowing.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a very complex world. The signified versus the signifier is the toughest thing, because when I throw out a bunch of words, everybody's going to read those words and maybe get what they want out of it themselves. I'm going to be doing that with the game, too. I'm getting out of the game something that is not necessarily always what the game maker wants. So for me, Shadow of the Colossus and Zelda are games about location. I feel very attracted to that. Super Mario Galaxy too. This kind of very tied to this idea of worlds and things to see. So to me, those games are really unified in that way. Whereas someone else could say, well, in Shadow of the Colossus, you don't have items, so that game is nothing like Zelda. And that's just a different lens to look at it.
Sure. Now, okay, so we've talked about, you know, the release craziness of the game. We've talked about review scores in great length. So let's go on to the actual game itself, Evan. Now, you've been playing it now for, what, like a few hours?
Couple hours, yeah.
And what are your experiences of it so far?
Well, first off, my experience was that, and I've said this before, there's a few too many cutscenes, a little bit too much story. It's not a bad thing, because it's not Metal Gear Solid bad. They give a really actually a pretty beautiful introduction to the game, in that it starts with a little bit of story. Peach has invited you to the castle. It's very Super Mario 64. And then you get to actually travel through the Mushroom Kingdom towards the castle, and the castle grounds are arranged just like the castle grounds in Super Mario 64. And that's very nice. But on your way, then a catastrophe strikes, and not that there's any way to ruin the plot. I won't get into too much detail. The cutscenes that occur right then are a little too much. It's just a little too long, a little too much setup for something that we already understand intrinsically. I need to collect the stars. I need to save the princess. So that's one thing. The other thing I noticed was that Mario, his jumping physics are different. They are much more springy than Super Mario Sunshine. And Super Mario Sunshine, to me, was the, in terms of play control, not necessarily in game design, but in play control, was one of the, the, maybe, what's the right word? It was the complete extrapolation. It was the end point that Mario 64 was trying to get to. Mario 64's controls were very, very good, and with a few quirks here and there, that Super Mario Sunshine, I think, on the whole, fixed almost entirely. And it's not that Mario Galaxy is another improvement upon that. It's just different. Your three jump, when you hit the A button three times with the correct timing, gets you much higher than before. And maybe that just has to do with the planets I'm on. Maybe I'll get on bigger planets where the gravity will go back to being low. But another thing that was weird is that the somersault jump, where you run one direction, then quickly run the other and jump at the same time, that does not cover as much width as before. It's a tall jump, but it doesn't get you as far as before. So a lot of times I was trying to get up on top of things, and I would run too far away, because I've been playing Mario 64 recently, and I expected the jump to be deep and wide, I guess. So the physics are different, just a little. Yeah. That takes some getting used to. Camera takes some getting used to. But the game is beautiful. Absolutely beautiful in every way. And I think that I will get over these initial concerns, and I will come to love everything about the physics. I don't doubt that. The thing that the only thing I'm really concerned about is that is the way you can die a lot, and the levels are so far pretty long, surprisingly long, and each one of them only gets you one star. So if there's 120 of these, and the game is much more constructed like a linear Mario game, even though it's got the Mario 64 and Mario Sunshine ability to choose which stars you actually want to complete. Once you get into that world, it's not like in Mario 64 where you just had to run off and find the star and it would be in six different places throughout the level and you had different objectives. You actually don't get to go to the same places in each galaxy that you go to, that you travel. You don't get to go to the same places if you select a different star. So star 1 will take you off to the left, and star 2 will take you off to the right. And if you want to go there, you have to pick that star. So what ends up happening is each galaxy is humongous, and parts of it you will only see if you get every star.
So there's definitely some value in the replay.
I think in terms of, if unless you're just going to play through it linearly, if that's a word, to just get every star in the whole game, then yes, there's replay value to go back and find everything. Plus, after you're done with each of those long levels, you can go back, try and get a high score with coins, try and get a high score with your star bits, and there's also purple coins, which I have not encountered yet. So I'm, but I've heard about them, and I don't know what they do. So the game is, if it's a little story heavy at first, that goes away. But other than that, everything so far is just like I would expect from a new Mario game, to be teaching me new things, getting me to work in a new way, and think in a new way. So so far, I'm thoroughly impressed. I'm very satisfied.
Definitely. All right. So I've been seeing a lot of the reviews lately, and they're saying that one thing about the graphics is, and you said it's a very beautiful game, is that it's kind of inconsistent.
Really?
In that it starts off very good, and then later on the textures take a bit of a nosedive.
Really?
And then it looks, I don't know, I've Shane Bettenhausen of 1UP has compared it to Super Mario 64 on some levels.
Oh, okay. But yeah, Super Mario 64 was kind of funky in that some of those first levels were very flat and what's the right word? It was very much like an open playing field. You were like that very first level, the Bomb minefield, whatever it's called, Mount Bomb. It's a world with a mountain, and you've got to scale that mountain. And it felt like you were in a place. And then later on, they would start to introduce these levels that were maybe floating in air, or that were maybe a little bit more abstract. And as a result, the world wasn't as consistent. So I can see what he's saying about Mario 64. I'm obviously not far enough in the game to comment on it. But I do have to say that the level of abstraction, the way each of these planets, there's a story excuse for why we're going from planet to planet. But it is very much an abstract game. Every single bit of it feels like Mario, feels more like Mario than Mario Sunshine ever did to me. And it feels even more Mario than Mario 64 did, even though at this point, I think I like Mario 64's atmosphere just a little bit more. And that might be nostalgia. I don't know.
Right.
But from what I've heard, because I read a lot, I have a feeling that Mario Galaxy can get there. And it's supposed to have great music. So far, I have experienced that. In fact, I think the soundtrack's better than Ocarina of Time, but better than Twilight Princess so far, which I thought was kind of a letdown in terms of music, not necessarily in sound design.
Right.
So,
excellent.
So yeah, graphically, I'm way impressed. If it gets worse as we go, I don't know if I'm going to be able to bring myself to care, honestly. So
definitely. You said you're only, you know, kind of still kind of close to the beginning, but based on your earliest impressions, where would you say this ranks for you as far as Mario games?
As far as Mario games? Well, I definitely think it's better than Mario Sunshine, just because of the level design. Like I've said before, the level of abstraction. I felt that Sunshine was more concerned with creating a consistent world, more along the lines of a Zelda story. And so you go to different towns within this this island of this Delfino Island. And I liked how in Mario 64, when you found, like, to me, Dire Dire Docks is one of the most beautiful places in Mario 64, because you just jump into this wall of water, and then suddenly you're flying through the sky now into a puddle, and you're like, oh, okay, I've got to get through this well of water, and you end up in at Bowser's submarine, encased in some sort of hangar. That kind of experience, I think, is more akin to what we see here, where every time as you go, you're always like, what's the next planet? And what's the next planet going to be after this? And then each of the galaxies so far has kind of progressed, where it's like another evocation of this kind of a green and earthy type planet, but they get different every time. And so as the game goes, I think that we're going to see each of the galaxies kind of have a different style. So, I think that, again, I always talk about the worlds. I love worlds so much better than I love moves or action. And so far, I've played a couple bosses, and I've gotten quite a few stars, and this game is better than Mario Sunshine for sure. Excellent. That's how I would rank it.
All right, I think that actually brings us to the end of the show.
Yeah, absolutely.
We did a little quickie show. We talked about, you know, our various troubles, locating a copy, or at least your troubles. We talked about reviews, and then reviews in general. And we got to some good impressions of the game. Aaron's review should be going up any time now. If it's not up already, it should be up very, very soon.
I'm anxious to read it. I want to know what he thinks.
I forgot to ask him the score, but I guess that doesn't matter, does it?
No, I don't think it does.
All right, Evan. Well, thanks for stopping by. And you folks look forward to a brand new episode of Regular Old Radio for Nintendo this Thursday. See ya.
Bye-bye.